So today's episode is a continuing part of my discussion with Toby Adelaja, who is a mental health practitioner. And a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about mental health, about the high rates of suicide in men in the UK. So yeah, we're just continuing in that discussion today, and I hope you enjoy it. So if you want to kind of catch up with what we've been talking about so far, just go back to listen to the episode 17 and you get to know what we're talking about, and then you can kind of follow it up in today's episode as well. So thank you so much. I hope you enjoy it.
You know, which shows that there's still a lot of work that needs to be done.
Wow.
And it's in general, because I don't know if it's natural, but social culture or social, you know, tendencies, we are more like, even me, sometimes I do it subconsciously, like, yes, let me just, are we able to deal with it? Because we have this sort of mindset of, men has this mindset of, they want to resolve things themselves.
Yeah, in charge, yeah.
Yes, even when they're struggling, they won't tell, they won't tell anyone. They want to try and see if they can resolve it themselves. But women, they can't help but just talk. They can't help. They would, if they can't talk, they will find someone to talk to. You know, and that's the difference I've seen, anyways.
Wow.
You know, women, we keep things in. It's probably when it is a bit last minute, then we quickly say, even when we're even saying it, we're not even saying the full stuff. We're just cutting and pasting and, you know.
Wow. That is very interesting. I'm glad you mentioned that, because I've actually learned something from that, because even though I'm aware that, yeah, men tend to hold things to themselves, but that statistic is, I can't even say the word, the statistics,
yeah.
It's a bit of a tongue twister there.
I know.
So the statistics there really is actually very scary, and it's something. Wow. But because, I mean, a lot of the time, even when we listen to news, or maybe it's just myself, we tend to hear more of women and things like that. We don't tend to hear a lot of men, you know,
that talk about their mental health.
Yeah, exactly.
The latest one, sorry to call you short there.
Yeah.
The latest one is, what's her name? This lady, the tennis lady. Osaka.
Yeah.
Osaka.
Mila. Is it Mila? Something, yeah, I know him because she pulled out,
French Open,
that's what we hear more of, you know, women this, women that, because we feel like it's women that is more affected, you know, that, because from what we hear, we assume that is women that is most affected by this mental health, and we hear less of men and stuff like that. So it's really good that you really brought attention to that, and I mean, hopefully, it will open all of us, those of us that are listening, might actually open our eyes to probably help reach out more to the men around us, I guess. Help them to open up more and just, encourage them to seek help as well. And hopefully that would help someone as well. Because I initially was more, because I'm a woman, I was more concerned about women, and because obviously for the women's show,
it should be both ways.
Yeah, that's the thing. But I'm just trying, I'm nailing myself to the cross here, because I said that I was more concerned about women, because I only know about women, I only see a lot, you only hear of it on the news and things like that. So for you to bring that to my attention, that's great, that's wonderful. But I'm still gonna just talk a little bit about women,
that's
if that's okay.
No, that's fine, that's totally fine.
Now I love the fact that you mentioned the case of that lady, Osaka, and then there's also one as well about that I hear on the news recently about a lady committing suicide because she was her benefit was taken away from her. There were so many other cases, we hear of them in the news anyway. But something I heard an interview over the radio, and a lot of there's this con, let me just say that there's this is a misconception about when women are crying out, they're saying, like you said, feeling suicidal, because it's a good thing that women actually talk, you know. Yeah. That's one thing.
Yeah.
And so I mean, it seems as if sometimes from what I've heard and the conception misconception that is, oh god, I can't even talk. So from what I heard and the misconception that is going around is that because women talk a lot, so it's like now people are now saying that, oh, when they say this kind of a thing like suicidal thoughts and things like that, it's like they're calling, they're just calling for attention. So what do you what do you say about that?
Well, this is why, you know, it's I don't think it's up to the people to decide to say that they're calling for attention.
Yeah.
Let the specialist people decide. It shouldn't be you deciding. It's just like someone saying that I'm having a headache issue. You shouldn't be the one diagnosing the person like, oh, you're, that's attention seeking. You know, it's not right. If you're not in that role to, you know, even that word, I don't like using that word anyway, it's attention seeking. Because it's not right. You know, it's about going into the reason why. It's about when the person says that, oh, I'm sorry you feel that way. I mean, what's been going on with yourself? Ask them questions rather than just dismissing, oh, please, you always say that every time. Oh, I feel no. Is it just you? You know, see, you have this, you have that, you know, sort of thing. But rather, if you know you can't, you don't know the right things to say, direct them to the appropriate support. Like for example, if you don't know anywhere, GP, call the GP on behalf of the patient. Get the patient or the friend or family to speak to the GP, you know, or encourage them to call the GP rather than saying, let the GP be the one to say it's nothing to worry about, rather than you diagnosing the person, you know, because you don't know what the words may say that would affect, you know, what they're actually going through. Yeah, some of them might not be, you know, as probably, you know, some people say I feel depressed, but they're not actually really feeling depressed. Sometimes it might be probably they're just really feeling low, which most times, sometimes we feel that way, which is a natural thing. We do feel sometimes. We feel sometimes when you just wake up, just don't feel like doing anything. You know, it does not mean that you feel depressed, but people are very quick to sort of diagnose themselves and say, oh yeah, I feel depressed. You know, if you really see someone that is depressed, you would literally go and be praying for them, because the word depression is a very, it's like they, you know, when you say biggest, it's like the worst of them all.
Wow.
Because when someone is depressed, which means that something is pressing them down. If you look at how depressed, it's like they are being pressed down and they can't really do anything about it. That's why when someone is depressed, they can't, you know, eat. Probably sometimes they might not even show symptoms of not eating or not doing anything. Sometimes they might be functioning, but right inside of them, they're going through some dark moments when they go back to their own shells or something, you know. So rather than saying, oh, the person is so attention seeking, you know, who are you to say to that person anyway that they're attention seeking, you know? Because you're not actually in their shoes. So how can you say that? So it's better for whoever, you know, you see, or if anyone sees anyone that is feeling that way or saying things, like you said, women always express themselves every time, which is really good. But then if you recognize some things in regards to their mental health, then just direct them to the right support if you know you can't, you know,
be helpful.
No, you can be helpful, then be helpful in other ways.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you very much. That is true. So if you can be helpful, get them help, you know. At least the least you can do is help them find the right help.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah, exactly. That is good. So talking about help, so what's I mean, we can go to the GP, but are there other resources that we can?
Yes. So there are several resources. Because of the technology that we have now, it's fantastic, literally. There are resources that you can get support whilst on your phone. For example, there are some several apps for mental health that people can use. For example, the common one, depression, anxiety, those are the most common mental health illnesses that people go through. There are some apps that specifically help with that.
Okay.
That you can get some sort of cognitive behavioral therapy on the phone, you know, where it sort of gives you instructions of what to do on how to recognize those things and what to do when you start recognizing them, the symptoms, and so on and so forth. I'll just give one that I usually recommend to patients that's struggling with anxiety and depression as well. It's called What's Up, so which is WHATS and then space UP, and then you can just put mental health. So it's available on Google Play and Apple Play. It's free to download. The description of the app is like there's a big black hand and then a small hand a bit in between it, which means that it's like somebody helping you up or something like that. I think it's by Jackson Tampra, the person that did that. So that developed it. So in summary, what it really does is that, like I said before, it uses the cognitive behavioral therapy to sort of help the person to understand, why am I feeling this way? What's got me to this stage? How can I get myself out of it? And how can I help myself manage just this? Because sometimes with mental health, it can be something like you have to keep managing it, because it can be like a reoccurring thing, you know, because some triggers, you can't eliminate them. They're always going to be there, but it's about knowing how can I manage them. Just like someone that's got type 1 diabetes, for example, you have to keep using insulin, you know, to keep and then keep track of your blood sugar and so on, to see if it's going high or too low, things like that. Same as this as well, it's more about just keeping track of your mental health, because just like we do with our physical health, we can always keep track of it. When we start seeing some symptoms, you know, we know what to do. So an app like that is quite good.
That's good, yeah. You know,
for things like that as well.
Oh, that's really good.
Yeah. But there are several apps as well. For example, people that struggle with self-harm, because that's also another thing as well that some people feel, you know, that they struggle with, which is a way of coping with what they're feeling. It's not a safe way of coping with it, if you see what I mean.
It's just like
people say, oh, I smoke because it helps me to feel relaxed, for example. It's the same thing as self-harm as well. Some people self-harm because they want to feel relief of the pain. And it can be interpreted in several ways depending on what the person interprets the reason why they're doing the self-harm. So there's an app that helps you sort of go through those things and put them in perspective and try to, you know, help the person when they're having those thoughts to self-harm. It's called Calm Harm. So it's C-A-L-M, M for mother, and then space harm, which is H-A-R-M. So that is also on Google Store and Play Store, I believe.
Okay.
Let me just check on my phone quickly, because I think it's on, I'm not sure if it's on Place.
Apple
Store, I'm not sure. Okay. Yeah, I can see it on Google Play. So it's literally just called Calm Harm and manages self-harm, and it's a fantastic app as well. But you know, if people want to do like self resources like that, they could also just go online, type in Mind Charity. Is one of the biggest UK mental health charity, you know. They've got loads and loads of self resources there that people can use, and they can be able to signpost them. But like I said, if all those things are a bit too much, GP could be the first thing. But if you go online, you have a lot of resources there. And depending on where you live, for example, the people that live in Cambridgeshire and Peterborough, they can get in contact with someone over the phone 24 hours if they need to speak to anyone, which is 111 option 2. You know, we have 111, through the options. In Cambridge and Peterborough, option 2 is for mental health. But in other places, I think the government is spreading it out now. So the best way of people getting any support is what they can do is they can just go online, just type in mental health support near me, and then you'll be able to search according to your area. They will give you the numbers pertaining to where you live. Yeah, and then you'll be able to speak to someone. I think the government are really pushing that out now to give people like 24 hours of support for their mental health so they can speak to someone at any time. Just like you can call 999 at any time.
Oh, wow.
They are starting to put those things in place now. So it's really, they are starting to put a lot of funding into mental health now, because obviously with the pandemic now, we're getting a lot of referrals from people struggling, even people that have never in their life struggled with mental health before. Now they're struggling, you know, with their mental health.
Wow, excellent. Thank you so much. I like the way you just mentioned, because I was just about to ask you about, I mean, pandemic, because I know the pandemic must have been, oh my gosh, a big thing. So can you just tell me your little experience, how, you know, how it was for you during the pandemic as a mental health practitioner?
It was overwhelming at the beginning, because people were just calling and calling, because it's not something that anyone was trained for, or I mean, in regards to what people were experiencing, it's just suddenly we had to lock down, everyone had to stay indoors.
Yeah.
And we as human beings, we are sort of programmed in a way that we have to socialize. Even though you are an introvert here, there's still a way you socialize, isn't it?
Yeah.
You still have your connection.
So yeah.
It's just embedded in us for us to socialize, and when that is just suddenly cut short, or just broken, it would have some impact on the mental health, you know. And during those periods, we were so busy. I mean, in our county here in Cambridgeshire, it was really, really busy. You know, we saw a rise in people feeling very anxious. Even after the lockdown, some people are still feeling anxious to go out, because it's like you have to relearn it again. I gave an analogy to one of my colleagues. I said, you know, it's just like a lion. I don't know if it's a bit extreme, but it's just like a lion that's been taken away from the forest, where he's always been able to roam around, collect the food if he wants, I mean, hunt for food, do whatever he wants to do, sleep wherever he wants to sleep, and do whatever he wants to do, and then being taken away and be taken into a zoo. To me, that is more like you're putting the lion in lockdown. You know, and if you even notice lion, well, this is my illustration, sir. If you notice lion in a cage is different from a lion in the forest. Their behaviors is different, and if you notice, well, immediately the lion is being taken away from the zoo or the cage out in the forest, it runs. It's like it's as if they just go crazy. It's like, oh my god, we done. And sometimes they might do things out of some things that are not out of their normal.
They're normal, yeah.
This because it's been so long. They need to relearn how to probably interact with or do things around again. And I feel the same thing with us as well, because we've been locked in for so long. Sometimes probably that's why some people are struggling, because you know it's obviously affected their moods, how they interact, how to do things, and so on and so forth. But for us, for example, for me, I was opportuned to go out still, and I think that helped as well, because I can't imagine just staying inside. I'm not just driving 10 minutes down the road or something, you know. Yeah,
that is true, because I mean, I'll tell from my own experience as well. I'm a homebody, you know. I'm quite an introvert as well, but it did affect me, I must say. Despite the fact that I, even when it initially started, I was like, oh, that's no problem, I like to stay at home anyway, there's no big deal, you know. But it got to a stage I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, it got to that stage, that, and that's very true. And that part, I mean, and you know, it just made me realize that a lot of us, even though we during that pandemic we only saw the A&E and stuff like that, we didn't realize that there's also, you know, apart apart from the physical that we hear of a lot of the time that we see and we think, oh, it's so bad, but there's also the mental aspect.
Yeah.
And many of us may not understand that this thing also has a mental effect on people.
Yes.
And that's why, I mean, we know I've heard a lot of it on the news, but we know a lot of people may have committed suicide because of this. I know I've heard one or two stories of someone committing suicide during the pandemic, and with our own little brains, we would think, ah, just because they asked you to stay at home, you know, and if only you understand the mental, I mean, I don't know why these people did it, but I mean, I'm sure there's an element of that in for them to make such do whatever they've done, you know, and just like the other stories that we hear of, you know, like I said earlier, the news of a lady that committed suicide because of our benefit was, you know, and you think, you know, many of us, we know what we're going to be thinking about when it comes to that. But it takes someone to have experienced certain things like that, you know, in mental health for you to really understand. But we don't have to just limit it to that, saying we have to experience it for you to know. We also have to be, is it empathetic about it, or empathetic about people going through mental health, because it's actually a very serious issue, just as it is the physical physical health is also as important as well. Our mental health is just as important. Thank you so much. And you know, the part about anxiety as well, I mean, I don't know. I just wanted to share something there, because even after, if I think it was during the pandemic, and because there was a lot of less interaction, obviously we knew that, it got to a stage for me, there was a time that I had to talk to someone that I have not spoken to in a long time, for a very, very long time. Before the pandemic anyway.
Yeah.
I started having anxiety, and I was like, where is this coming from? I was really anxious that just to talk, like literally talk, because I'm like, how do I talk to this person? How do I sit? You know, it was like, I'm like, wow, is this what people go through? Because I don't understand what the anxiety was coming from. Up to this stage, I was saying, you know what, I don't want to talk to this person. That was how bad it was. I was about to be like, you know what, not going to talk. I was really, really anxious, and it's scary, because if you've not experienced that kind of a thing, you're like, wow. You know, for you to just, because you've not spoken to someone in a while, and then you're all of a sudden anxious about what to say, how to talk to the person.
It's do you know what, it's actually something that some people are going through every single day, every single day, and that is their main, you know, that's their main concern, just stepping out of the house. There's so many things going through their heads, they can't move, they can't, because they are, it's like they keep going round and round in circles, they can't break that cycle, and it's until they get the right support right help or the right advice for someone to help them to break the cycle, because they will just keep going, because that is what anxiety is about. It's just one thing, and then just focusing on that, and that is what therapy does. It helps you to break those off. It might take a while. It's like it's helping you to break those sort of cycle elements, you know, in them. But obviously, like I said, it takes a while.
Yeah, I know mine is just a simple, a minor thing, but to me, but that's how it starts for many people, though. That it becomes a bigger thing, and you know, And I was just watching a film, sorry, we're about to close it down now. I was watching a film just yesterday, and it was about this, it was on Netflix, I can't remember the name now. It was this lady that doesn't want to go out, basically. There's a phobia.
I've seen it.
You've seen it? Phobia. Is it something phobia?
No,
anyway.
Something. She was looking at neighbors and stuff.
She was looking at neighbors, but she can't go out. She can't actually step out of her house. And that was, like you just mentioned, that was due to social, because she lost her family. I mean, remember, I'm ready to story for anyone who hasn't watched it. I'm so sorry that I'm spoiling it for you guys. I'm sorry. But
you know what? Probably you need to get the title of that thing and share it, because it's a very good movie. I discussed with my wife as well. I was like, to watch this movie. I saw the trailer, I was like, oh my god.
It's very, 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 very good.
Sorry to call you short there.
It's okay. So yeah, but you know, because initially when I was watching, I was wondering, when I saw that, oh, she's the kind of person that doesn't like to go out, and if she goes out, it will affect, and I'm thinking, okay, just before I realized what happened to her before then, and I something came to me that something must have triggered it, something must have caused that. So I'm thinking now, just by saying this now, do you think there's always an element of, usually, I think I've read somewhere that usually, like, you know, I don't want to go all gory about it, but you know, sometimes when people start expressing sentimental issues, I know you have said something about social and things like that, but do you also think it also goes back to their childhood? Is it true? Because a lot of people say that a lot of things that people, like all the serious mental, if you know what I mean,
they
always link it back to me. Exactly. Is that true?
Yeah, it's true. You know, that's why I categorized all of these things in social aspect things, because there are also social aspects. So it could be things that they've not dealt with in the past, and then it's coming back to affect them. Probably something not so similar to it, but triggers it, and then triggers things from the past that happened 20 years ago, because it's not been dealt with, it's just been put in a box separate. You know, like past traumas, childhood traumas, abuse. That's when we do assessments, we really go deep into those things just to find out not just about the family history, but also things in their childhood, things that happen in their school, because people go through things in school that they just go at the back of their mind to say, you know what, probably it's not their fault that they put it aside, it's just probably distraction. A thing as well, probably. They go out of uni straight away, they go a job, so all those things have just, they're always busy. And then probably sometimes when they're not, probably when they're less busy, they have time to sort of
think about, oh gosh,
those things will come back. And this is why I feel, this is my own theory anyways, I feel people are struggling, we are getting new people with new symptoms during this pandemic, they have more time to themselves.
That is so true. I know they always say something about an idle hand is the devil's workshop, but in a way it's true, because when you don't have much to do anymore, there's nothing to distract you, then you start going, something else start coming to you. Oh my gosh, it's not good.
That's why it's really good to just deal with the things, but it's very easy to say, isn't it? But it's about dealing with those things that's happened in the past. Sometimes it might not be easy at that time to deal with it, but try and deal with it when you can. You know, because those things would definitely, it's something that's been planted. It's like when you plant a seed, you forget about it, but the thing is still growing.
You may not even see it. It may just be roots. You know, there's plants that actually grow in the ground instead of outside.
That's a very good analogy. You see,
like carrots now, it grows in the soil. You only see the flower.
You only see the flower. You might call the flower.
You think there's nothing there.
But there's things still on the ground that's not been dealt with. There's some things that probably some people, sometimes they may not even know that it's actually there. And that is why it's very good to always do when you start seeing certain symptoms, probably when you start feeling a little bit in a certain way, it could be any symptoms. It could be probably things that you love doing, slowly you start seeing yourself not willing, you're very sluggish and wanting to do it because you don't want to do it, but you just don't have the energy to do it. You know, that could be a symptom, that could be one of the true signs, or probably something triggered you from something that's happened in the past. Then probably that can be a sign to say, you know what, I need to get some support, I need to start probably looking to this more with someone that's got the expert in this area, to start to see, okay, is there anything in my childhood or is there anything in my past? It might not be necessarily be childhood, it could be something in the past that, you know, we sometimes just ignore a lot of things that, I don't want to deal with this now, sort of thing. There might be things that might come back to bite us in the back, you know, and it can be something very minor that might happen later on, and then it would blow up to something bigger than you expect. Yes, the main point is do it then as soon as you could. It cannot be immediate. There's some things that probably you know, just like bereavement, for example, is something that is a personal, people have different personal levels at which they go through the different stages.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a acceptance stage and then there's a stage where you have to solve, you know, okay, you know what, yes, I want to start talking about it now. And then that stage of, you know what, I want to know how to manage this thing I'm feeling now, sort of thing. So once the person is ready, you know, to start, you know, or recognize it, it's you know, that's the most important thing. Just start as soon as you recognize any symptoms of struggling with, you know, things from the past or traumas or whatnot.
Thank you so much. I've learned so much. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
I must say, you must really enjoy your job. Can you just give us a little description of what you actually do? Because you talk about you go out, you get to meet people. Is it like a community thing that you do?
So I would say it's a community thing, but so my role is I'm one of the clinical leads in our team. So what I usually do is, well, I supervise at the same time, also assess patients. So what we do is we assess patients, anyone that presents with mental health crises, that are in mental health crisis, we assess them at that point, either over the phone or face to face, and then we refer them to the appropriate service they need. So we are more like the gatekeepers for the for the trust. So anything mental health for the trust, it comes to us first, either from the police, from the ambulance service, anywhere, GP, any other professional, they come to us first if they want to make a referral. So we do the assessment and then we refer. So one of my role is to supervise and monitor those things that are going on, and also give advice to GPs and other professionals as well when they call in for assessments, and also deal with complex cases as well, but at the same time I still do all of the other things as well, you know, going out for assessments and so on. But at the moment I'm doing like a pilot project with the ambulance service, where we are trying to solve if anyone calls 999 rather than the ambulance service going in, if it's for mental health, because people call 999 when they're in mental health crisis, probably someone that's struggling, probably is on the street or something, or with the police, something quite serious that needs immediate support for mental health. So we've created a service where a mental health practitioner and a paramedic, we go in a car, like the ambulance car, and then go straight there. We can go in blue lights to support them. So just as anyone would get immediate support for their physical health, we have that for mental health now, that immediately if they need that support, we are right there with them to support them, and then to you know, signpost them to the appropriate service from then on. And this is also to help to reduce people going to A&E as well, because sometimes A&E might not be the right place for them. You know, they have to stay for 4 hours, and sometimes someone going through anxiety, maybe that's not even the right place for them to stay. That would probably affect them even more. So that is a nutshell of what, you know, I do day to day.
Wow, that is wonderful. Thank you so much for what you do. Thank you so much.
Thank
you for coming onto this podcast. It's been amazing. Honestly, I feel like we need to arrange another time again, because I've got so much more questions to ask, but because of time, you know, so you would have to come back again if that's okay with me.
I'm so happy to be on your show. You know, it's a pleasure.
Thank you.
You know, you're doing great things. I've listened to some of your podcasts.
Thank you so much for coming. Thank you guys. I think that's all we've got for you guys today. I was gonna say, oh, have you got social media? Because the people that have come to the show, they've got a social media thing, you know, but obviously you are a professional, you don't have time for that.
Well, you can find me on LinkedIn.
Okay.
How about that? So
all right,
that's the professional thing I
use. Toby.
Wait, let me see. I don't even know the name. Let me look for it very well. So it's just Toby Adelaja. So
okay.
T for Tom, O for Orange, B for Boy, I for Iron, and then Adelaja. A for Alpha, D for Dog, E for Echo, L for Ladder, A for Alpha, J for John, A for Alpha. If you just search that name, you'll see my face. I think that's the only name on there. I don't know. Hopefully.
Okay, hopefully. I know there's a lot. No, it's true though. You think your name is the only one there, but there's many.
And then you see so many names, and you're like, hopefully you'll be able to find me in there.
Guys, you can find Toby on LinkedIn if you want to know. I mean, I guess you probably have any more questions regarding mental health or something like that.
You
can message him over there. Oh, thank you so much once again, Toby, for coming on.
Welcome.
And we hope to see you again back on this podcast.
Yeah, no problem. It's an honor to be here.
Thank you so much. All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you guys have enjoyed it. All the information will be in the description box somewhere. So all the app information and things like that, I'll put it somewhere in the description so you know. And thank you so much for listening. Thank you, Toby. And I will catch you again next time on this podcast. Bye, guys.
Bye.